Okay, we'll start now with the with the questions. You got some quiet.
Okay, so we've split up these questions. So Ralph's going to do two and I'm going to do two. The backlog of material is processing a skilled task and can volunteers help? Processing the backlog is the task of the staff. We've been trained to do it in particular ways. Remember that diagram that Ralph showed with the forms and how it's supposed to be put into series and catalog, different series and gone through it in a particular order. But there are tasks that volunteers do, and we would always welcome inquiries about volunteering with our team. A lot of what we have to do is try and find the metadata and the description and all the context for the things that we're uploading. So sometimes that involves going on microfilms and looking through years and years with the Manawatu standards and looking for the articles that match photographs. There is an almost endless amount of that kind of work. And there's also sometimes little bodies of work for digitisation that we do in-house rather than send it to, we work with New Zealand Micrographic Services in Wellington for harder to digitise materials, things that have already started to suffer from vinegar syndrome or curling or attractive books. We send them away to professional digitisers, but we do have the ability to scan slides, negatives, photographs, and we can teach you how to use the materials that we have and the computer to do that yourself. And we do have volunteers to come and do that. So that's the kind of work that we'd be probably looking at for volunteer work. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that's a pretty comprehensive coverage.
Okay. Do you want to?
Oh, okay. I will answer one of the questions here. Is the archival collection catalogued? So the answer to that is the parts of the collection that have been arranged and described are catalogued. But the unprocessed backlog is not yet catalogued. We do have an in-house spreadsheet that lets us know what those collections are, who they've been donated by. But in terms of catalogues available to the public, it's only the material that has been catalogued. At the moment, the way to access the databases that list our archival holdings is through the library website. If you go to the library website, and is it under collections and heritage? Yes, if you go to the page that says collections and click on heritage, you will then have one link that will allow you to search the City Council archives, and that will take you through to the website for Archive Central. Now, Archive Central is a database that documents the records not just of the Palmerston North City Archives, but also local government records from across the mid-central region. So if you are searching that database, you have to make sure the records you're looking at are the Palmerston North records, otherwise we won't hold them. When it comes to the community archives, if you click on the link on the library website, it will take you to a different catalogue, and that will allow you to search both the community archives and the research files that we hold. Now, there is a plan afoot to move the cataloguing of all that material onto the Manawatu Heritage website, so that there is going to ultimately be this one-stop shop where you can search not only our digitised collections, but also the council archives and the community archives. You'll be able to look across all those three collections in one location. But that's still being worked through at this stage, and we don't know the ultimate time frame when that will be going live.
Okay, so regarding the moderation of contributions to the digital archives, is there any material you don't accept, and what sort of material would that be? So I can tell some of you imagined what that might be. I just flipped back to this one here because recently we updated the text on our contribute page. Please note we are not currently accepting uploads enhanced using artificial intelligence AI tools. Because we have had someone use AI photograph tools to try and clean up some images, and it's not good. It probably will be good soon, where you could take an image of someone that you've had, whether there's a rip down the person's face. And an AI tool might help you stitch that together without using Photoshop skills. You would have to learn the entirety of that program to be able to get that correct. But at the moment, it makes things look really poor. It doesn't display faces well. It just looks fake. It makes you question whether or not the image is even local at all. So the image was a married couple emerging from a church, but you couldn't see the church. The faces were all smooth, and you just couldn't tell that it was even local. You just had the person's word that that's what it was. So at the moment, we're not accepting images like that that we can detect with our eyes that that's what's happened to them. So it's a bit of a faith thing. And all upvotes are taken on faith that you are correct in saying, this is my grandfather, or I know the street, this is my house. If we investigated every single piece of material that was uploaded, nothing would ever be uploaded. So we often use things like, this is believed to be. And then we have a commenting system where you have the right to say, no, that's the street across the other way. It's been flipped when you scan the slide. And then we can correct things. And we really encourage that because it encourages that description of things. But yes, please don't upload things that I don't want to see, because I look at everything before it gets published. And if there's enough stuff in the archives that I have not wanted to see. I actually give myself a little award, a Halberg Award, every time I see something that I really should not have seen, and I have 8 of these awards. So please be mindful of people that have to look at what you upload. Thank you.
So the question I have here is there complete communication and cooperation between Te Manawa and archives regarding A, who takes what, and B, the use of it, e.g. a display planned for Te Manawa using materials they have to build on, but archives could be used to flesh this out. So we do keep in touch with the staff at Te Manawa, mainly the staff in their social history area, because that's the area where there is the greatest overlap between what we do. And that does often involve us having conversations about which institution is the most appropriate home for certain material. Sometimes there will be a donation offered to Te Manawa where there are both physical artefacts that have complicated storage needs and preservation requirements that we as an archive are not set up to manage. But it will also involve some paper-based documentary records that are very much our area. And in that case, we have a conversation about should this collection be kept together physically, or does it make more sense for the artefacts to stay with Te Manawa and the paper-based records to come into our archival holdings? Te Manawa is managed by a trust board, so ultimately what does or doesn't go into their collection has to be signed off by that particular board. So there are certain checks and balances in terms of what those final decisions are. In terms of the use of material, Te Manawa does frequently approach us for using material as part of their displays. Often they don't necessarily want the physical original. Often they will just want an image of what we have so that can be incorporated into their signage. But earlier this year, they did actually approach us about borrowing some of the Charlotte Warburton material for incorporation into an ANZAC display. But then ultimately they found that the items were larger than they had anticipated and they couldn't actually fit them into the case they had set aside for that display. So yes, we do communicate with one another and cooperate.
Okay, we now open for questions from the floor, if anyone has anything else that they want to ask.
On a personal note, I've got boxes of family archives that have been handed down through the generations. I had hoped that I would be able to sort it all out into some sort of order and then pass it on to my daughter to take over and maintain from there on. But it doesn't look as though I will. It still remain as a jumble of stuff in boxes. Is there people in there that will help me with that sort of thing?
We can certainly give advice. Unless the archive is actually being donated to us and coming into our collection, we certainly wouldn't do the arrangement and description for you. But we can sort of advise you in terms of guidelines. And just as importantly, we can advise you in terms of appropriate storage and the sorts of materials you might want to use for housing the photographs and housing the documents to help protect them against deterioration. So if you contact us in the heritage team, we're happy to make a time to meet with you and have that conversation.
Thank you. I've just got one question about privacy from an earlier date, like 1918 or 20, which is a long time back now. And this doesn't come past in all manner of two. But a country district where I was a principal and it was a history of the school, and they managed to get a brand new school in 1888 or something, and then the local expert farmers thought more sun should shine on the school and dropped a rather large macro cap, I think it was, that went the wrong way and practically demolished the school. Now that would be in, we were having the 125th quarter, and they wanted to put that picture out, but in the background was a wagon or something with the name of a local family on it. So it could be embarrassing, and I just wondered where privacy issues of old material for an exhibition like that and a school. A jubilee or something. Where does the line get drawn?
Yep. So Jamie, would you?
Yes.
This speaks a little bit to the slides that I cut out because I thought I'm not going to bore you with the Privacy Act. We are governed by the Privacy Act, so whatever it states in there is what we do. So there are 13 principles of the Privacy Act. Amendment 2020, and there are upcoming changes to it, potentially 2025. Something that is that far in the past wouldn't be considered private anymore. It would be more about the copyright of the image. Oh. And it's not so much a privacy issue where you describe that because there are living members of the family. It's an ethical one for you to decide whether you want to do that or not. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So when we have images, it's to do with what is the copyright, and it's 50 years after the death of the photographer, I think. I can never remember off the top of my head. I have to get out my giant book, just thick. And then I think there is an argument for applying an ethical layer over the top, so the Privacy Act might say, this is fine, but really should you? So the most difficult one we've ever had were images to do with Lake Alice psychiatric facility and whether or not they should be published, because it can be very triggering for people to be looking at pictures of cats and then all of a sudden there's a picture of that facility. So although we may have the right to publish it, should we publish it? So those sorts of, yeah. So there's the Act, the regulation, the rules that tell you what you should do, and then having to think about whether the individual context in each case makes sense.
Can you put things in the archive with a restriction, such as not to be made publicly available until sometime? No, no restrictions possible.
Oh, I'm sorry, you can restrict. Yes.
I think there has to be a valid grounds, though, and there does have to ultimately be a date when they will be made publicly available, for the simple reason that because the archives are funded using public money, there needs to be some kind of public benefit that returns to the community. So if you can justify restricting access for 30 years, we'll do that. But at some point, ultimately, those records have to be accessible to future generations.
Yeah. And there's another dimension as well, because we've talked about oral history recordings. There are issues of permissions there for material to be used. So you'll be able to specify what those requirements are. But if you've just done recordings, someone who's died, and you say, well, can we just make this available? There's steps that have to be done.
The question I'd like to ask concerns clubs that have gone out of existence, particularly friendly societies and lodges. It's a two-edged one. People who come along and give you all these old records that they want to get rid of because they've got rid of the hall or whatever. This is what your attitude and what sort of records do you have of old clubs and societies?
Very extensive ones. Actually, it is the event that a club or a business is winding up. That's often the moment when people do approach the archives and offer those records to us. So again, as I mentioned, we actually need to do a very systematic audit of our current holdings to see what kind of clubs are well represented and what ones are not so well represented. But certainly in terms of lodges and friendly societies, I know we have very strong holdings. And we also have very strong holdings of different branches of the Country Women's Institute from around the region.
There's also a document on your website as to what sort of items you would want to keep from those sorts of organisations, what are worthwhile in that time.
I would need to double check whether that's up to date or not, but yes, yep.
Probably minute books, for instance?
Oh, minute books are definitely amongst the records we would want to retain. In terms of records we would often assess as not being of enduring historical value are a lot of lower value financial records. So things like piles of receipts. People sometimes offer us piles and piles of receipts, bank statements from 20 years ago, old phone bills, things like that. Sometimes if it's a financial record like the annual accounts as they were presented at the AGM for that year, that we would be interested in keeping, but not sort of more trivial financial records.
Okay, any more questions? I'll put in a plug as well. Anyone who feels they've got local stories that they would like to record, instead of writing them all down, you can just sit around and record them like that. And then we'll put them out on the Manawatu People's Radio and upload onto their website. We've got over 300-odd episodes already, so, you know, plenty more would be most welcome. So just make contact. And now I'll hand over to Chris to wrap up.
This has been a very enlightening afternoon. Thank you very much, both of you, Jamie and Ralph. We've learnt a lot. I'm trying to think of a way of characterising, but I'm not sure. Jamie's definitely digital, but you probably wouldn't like to be called analog, would you?
I've been called worse.
But of course, if you don't make copies, you have a real thing, so it's not quite
authentic
and digital. I was impressed by your maxim that digitization is not preservation, and I'm not sure that we quite got that resolved, because while you're digitizing more and more stuff, it's not actually guaranteed to be preserved, is it?
That's what my job is.
That's your job. Well, to keep you employed, that's good. It's a bit of a worry. I can't think perhaps we should be printing things off.
Yeah.
And archiving them as well. I don't know. I'm mindful, and Brian will appreciate this, I'm mindful of a debate that I once saw online about preserving records, and the one solution that was offered is that we should write everything in cuneiform and put it onto the baked clay tablets because they last. In 3,000 years' time, we will not be able to read any digital materials produced today. So just go to Brian, he's got the solution there. Anyway, thank you very much. It's been a really interesting afternoon, and we've learnt a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you.